The Around the NFL Podcast. Still follows TD on Twitter.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined by a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Wes shot out of a man cannon today.
Just a basic hoodie.
That's this. Mark, you're the expert. This is the same as Maroon Thunder, only gray, right, in terms of the brand?
That one is the genuine article man cannon hoodie. This is, I would call it fringe man cannon.
Okay, I'm going to take a picture right now and send it out to the
I like that Wes's masculinity and wardrobe is now kind of our, we used to mix it up. Now that's just our go-to, let's talk about that. Because I think I love Wes's reaction to it. You know, he's uncomfortable, but there's a part of him that's like, yeah, you guys are right.
Yeah, I fail to see the connection between masculinity and the change in my wardrobe. I thought my plaid shirts were masculine.
They were very masculine. It was never about masculinity.
They were country.
It was more the idea.
That's what I've been told.
Of Chris Wessling. And I thought that Gonzo put it well, actually, at the bar over the weekend. We were talking about something, probably Brock Osweiler. In fact, I think it was. And Gonzo said, "Listen, Wes is a black and white guy, and
this—that's not even true.
Listen,
a very nuanced, complex fellow.
And the fact that you're wearing a gray man cannon sweater right now, it says a lot.
Gonzo, by the way, Connie Fox's husband, John Gonzalez.
The how you've kind of transformed in your relationship with your paramour, and I think these man cannons—they speak so much for that transformation. You're like a butterfly.
It's a metamorphosis."
You think you're a lot different now than you were before you met Paramore, right?
No. Oh. I think I'm the same person.
I noticed another metamorphosis.
What?
Up until now, New Money, or I would say in the past, Sydney, very delighted to kind of work with us and the whole experience. I noticed a genuine exhaustion with the four of us during the lead up to the show today where we were all chatting away, kind of getting warmed up. Just sort of, I mean, she's got places to go, things to spend her loot
kind
on.
Kind of, would you say this is accurate? Kind of over it.
Little over it.
I mean, listen, it is now 2:25. If you take a look at your rundown, what time does it say we were supposed to start?
I like this. What is this affectation you're speaking with right now? You sound like Roz from Frasier.
I know.
We were supposed to begin at 2, you are correct.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you, Mark.
So, we should apologize. Sorry, Sid. We will be more punctual going forward. And you know what? Let's start talking about today's show because it's going to be a good one. It's going to be a pretty solid show, I think, because we have a lot to get to. A head coach posting has been filled. How about that? Mm. How about that? Intern label peeled off for the second time in as many years. So we'll be talking about that. Some other updates, including a star wide receiver out of Green Bay as we head towards the divisional round. Speaking of the divisional round, Mark, you, good sir, wrote a banger. And, you know, help me out with this. It's sexiest Super Bowl matchups. Now, does that mean we're picking the Super Bowl matchups that we'd most want to have sex with?
Well, no, it's the what I, you know, I sent
walk
it
me
in.
Through this.
Right, sure. It's, I mean, in theory, it's the ones we'd want to see the most.
The rosters with the highest, like, collection of sexy players.
Well, that's a whole different type of assignment, not one that I did. I mean, I sent it in. When you send these things, you write it and you put it in an email, you send it to the editors, and I just shot that as the title. It's kind of a joke. And then I saw it tweeted out by the NFL, and a lot of people very upset with the idea that was the title that I came up with.
No editor is going to turn down a chance to put sexy in a headline title.
Yeah, it's sexy.
Well, you're right.
It's a sexy opportunity. So it's not about being intimate with the teams.
It's not about, no, it's not that type of experience.
Okay, good.
As far as I know.
We will close the show by, we haven't done this in a while, we're going to open up the mailbag and see what the listeners have to say. So nice little show, but before we do any of that, first I want to share our sponsor, of course, exclusive sponsor of the Around the NFL Podcast, Mr. Flame, in his economics class in The Hague, the Netherlands.
Mr. F.
Literally, I mean, if you want to know how to crunch them numbers and know, more importantly, why the numbers get crunched and how, I think that's what happens in that class.
Or learn how to you know, maybe just learn how to sponsor a global podcast.
It's become much more than numbers.
Absolutely.
It's been about loyalty.
A true gentleman.
And some other things. Okay, let's get into the news. New money.
Playoffs? Don't talk about it. Playoffs? You kidding me?
Yes, it is playoff time, but let's start by talking about a team that has not sniffed the playoffs in a very long time. The Jacksonville Jaguars just finished up a four-year run with the Mark. Why is your leg up on the table?
It's resting it.
If it makes, sorry. If it's because you have some type of issue and you need to put it up,
I do. I'm just going to put it up there and rest it for a minute.
All right, I'm going to have to take my second.
Well, it's Tuesday. We're not on camera, so who cares?
Yeah, I got two photos to tweet out after the show now. Anyway, the Jaguars they stink under Gus Bradley. Two games before the season ended, what do? They fire Gus and they promote Doug Marone, our old friend Doug, to interim coach. And what do we learn on Monday?
Push me, cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. You know what I'm saying?
What is this?
Doug, we're trying to do some stuff here. The Jaguars, that was Doug
that
Marone.
That is Doug Marone from his Buffalo Bills days.
Oh.
Right? Is that right? Or was he
no,
with the Jacksonville Jaguars?
Forgot about
his
that.
Offensive line coach days. It was a Jaguars tweet that was sent out over
cutting
the summer,
loose.
Surprisingly. Anyway, Marone, who finished the 2016 season as the interim coach, has accepted the team's full-time head coaching job. A source informed of the situation told our own rap sheet. The team later made the announcement official, and here's where it gets a little – there's a little more intrigue. So, yeah, a little surprising that Doug's involved in a full-time capacity. But here's where I find it even more interesting. The team also hired Tom Coughlin, their first head coach, and, of course, the former Giants coach, two-time Super Bowl winner, as the team's executive vice president. They also extended general manager Dave Caldwell's contract. All three deals run through the 2019 season. Greg, it sets up an interesting dynamic in Jacksonville, doesn't it?
It's very strange. Imagine for interviewing for a job, getting the job like Doug Marone just did, and then finding
hey, man,
out.
Here I am, Doug. Man on your scene. I can give you what you want. You got to come home with me.
Doug, we're trying to do a podcast. Go ahead, Greg.
I mean, that's the best thing Doug Marone's done in the last few years. You get the job, and then you find out, oh, who's my new boss going to be? Oh, it's not someone I interviewed with. Oh, wait, it's the guy that was interviewing for the exact same job as me and wanted it. And not only is he my boss, he's my boss's boss. Tom Coughlin's a couple, you know, rungs
up the
here.
Old ladder.
He's an EVP. So it's a strange situation, but I'm sure Doug, who quit on the Bills essentially 2 years ago, is pretty happy to get it back in the big chair only 2 years after
Mark,
that.
Is it fair to say that Doug was playing chess this whole time?
I think he was.
I mean, he quit. I actually reread an ESPN profile from 2015 in which he talked in depth about how hard it was after he walked out on that job, the vitriol that came from Western New York and trying to reboot his career at Jacksonville.
Yeah. Think about all the tough responses he had to the mass text that he told his players that he was quitting with. I mean, that must have been tough.
He was not a popular guy after this happened, and he's never explained why.
Hustling,
Doug.
Hustling. Oh, where are you going?
Just calm down, Dougie. But he never explained it, but now he ends up back in a big chair, Mark.
I have to assume that the Jaguars, before they sealed all this up, had words with everyone involved that if you're Tom Coughlin or if you're Doug Marone or if you're David Caldwell, we are all going to agree that we can work together, because the Doug Marone departure in Buffalo had whispers attached to it for over a year where he was not getting along with Doug Whaley. And that's gone on in Buffalo. So that makes me wonder if Doug Marone was not just it's easy to look at him and the way he exited Buffalo and say, bad on you, but that's not that organization has its own issues. It's funny because Joe Banner, he was interested in hiring Doug Marone when they hired Rob Chudzinski.
See, rap is a New York City thing. It ain't nothing about race or culture. It's New York City.
I I'm sure some people.
I mean, come on.
Take him to task on that.
Rap's not about culture.
I mean, he's a Syracuse guy. I don't know if he's a New York City guy. Well,
he's from the Bronx.
He's from the Bronx. But Joe Banner tweeted out yesterday. He said, "Fantastic head coach hired by the Jags. He will do a great job. Has been my top head coach since we interviewed him my first year in Cleveland." They couldn't get him because Buffalo took him away. I think that some people inside the NFL circles think very differently about Doug Marrone than the media do, or certainly Buffalo Bills fans do.
I think unquestionably they played different in the final two games than they did the rest of the 2016 season. And Doug Marrone deserves some credit for that. Blake Bortles played with more confidence. He was more decisive. The play calling was a little bit different, and the defense played better too.
Well, he got credit. He got better than credit. He got three-year contract. It really sounded based on...
No, I'm saying from us he deserves some credit.
Sure. It really sounded from Ian Rappaport, our NFL Network insider,
that
he got the job based on those two games.
That's wild.
That they loved what they saw. They loved the direction. They loved his leadership.
It's a little surprising, isn't it?
I mean,
December games.
A week ago, we did not predict this course for them, but they're taking – it's not a safe route, but I think they really wanted Tom Coughlin to be part of this somehow.
And Doug's going to take the job. There's only 32 of these. I think he learned a lesson a little bit about how fleeting this stuff can be.
He's got some good things going for it.
And it's not a bad job, but you know what else? It's a little, to me, tricky when Tommy Coughlin, like we said, upstairs – openly campaign for that job. And if they have another tough year, who's to say Tom Coughlin won't say, "I think I'm the man to take this team finally in the right direction after another 4-12.
Or want his own hire. You know, I looked at this, and I think Bill Parcells has been noted as a Doug Marrone backer, whisperer, that he believed Doug Marrone was going to be a great head coach too. And so it all kind of makes sense. Yep. They're in the same tree. I looked at this as kind of a doubling down on the Blake Bortles era, that Doug Marrone, it sounds like, really sold them on his ability, that he believes in Blake Bortles, that he can turn Blake Bortles around. You have Caldwell, who's been given a long rope here to build this team up for 4 years. He believes in Bortles. And the contract only being 3 years, it kind of seems like to me it's like Marrone and Caldwell, they're Bortles guys, and they gotta get the Bortles thing working. And if it doesn't work, then maybe Tom Coughlin gets to choose a different coach in a year or two.
Himself, potentially.
Would you equate this with the Dolphins if they had done this, extended old muscles Dan Campbell after he put a hurting on the Houston Texans last year?
No, because Marrone has experience and I think more respect in terms of an ability.
It does remind me of the Dolphins hiring Bill Parcells upstairs.
They were 9-7 in Buffalo in 2014. I mean, he certainly has experience.
Only winning season for the Bills in 12 years. So, more coaching news, this time in Cleveland. The Browns have fired defensive coordinator Ray Horton after one season. Rap Sheet reported over the weekend to replace Horton. The Browns announced Sunday that they have hired former Rams defensive coordinator Greg with 2 G's Williams. This mark is a move that some people will find surprising. It means a change in their defensive front. Williams obviously comes with his own baggage, and for a team that has preached continuity, there seem to be a lot of changes going on underneath head coach.
Yeah, there are. I mean, I guess I want to be more surprised by changes when you have a coaching staff that presided over a 1-15 team. I mean, people want to leave that situation, number one, and some are going to be asked to leave. And with Greg Williams, there's obviously the Bounty Gate history. But I read an interesting article from Matt Bowen, who's now a writer but a former NFL player who played for Williams in Washington. He talked about what it's like playing for Williams beyond the whole Bounty Gate thing, and he just had one paragraph that I'll read. He said, within 5 minutes during his first meeting with Williams, he said, "I knew this was the guy I wanted to play for. He commanded that meeting room, spoke with supreme confidence, and let us know right away that things were going to change at Redskins Park." And look, I think every time someone comes in, you want to look at all the positives. Cleveland needed to make a change, and they had to pick from the guys that were available. I don't know what else to say about
Greg
Williams.
Did they need to make a change?
I think if you look at Cleveland's defense, it got worse as the season went on. And I don't have a problem with them making a switch.
I guess my question would be the fact that sometimes because they left them with very little talent going into the season, And then, of course, when you have no talent, it's going to be hard to win games. And then you're making heads roll when you didn't have a lot of weaponry to go into the season. So it surprises me that they're making these changes on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's ripe for critique, and it's being critiqued. I do think, if anything, that Greg Williams, his defense is at least, it seems like it would be a welcome change for Cleveland to have any sort of bite on defense, which they've not had since I've worked here and since you've worked here.
Yeah.
You might not know the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. How often have the Browns vacillated between 4-3 and 3-4 systems?
Many times. I mean,
that's a recipe for failure.
It is. So when you talk about it being critiqued, 100%. I would also say that the way that their roster's built right now, that I wouldn't say they're a distinctly talented 3-4 team,
right,
or a 4-3 team. So
well,
they are fluid.
I could see the thinking that Greg Williams is a good coach to have on a team without a lot of great talent, because he'll be so aggressive and, you know, he's all about forcing turnovers. His teams tend to give up big plays, but maybe you can win a little bit with scheme when you don't have the most talented players in the world. It's worth noting, for all the talent with the Rams the last few years, I mean, they weren't really a great defense.
They were a disaster down the stretch.
They were middle of the road in terms of points and yards in general every year. In New Orleans, he certainly had his success, but he's kind of a boom or bust type of coach. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's not bad for a team that doesn't have a lot of players.
Any of these guys that are getting hired, there's a reason that they were available.
It's funny how these guys get passed around.
Sure.
They go through so many stops.
One thing, there's also a lack of kind of in-game discipline on the Jeff Fisher, Greg Williams defense.
Oh,
Aaron,
yeah,
Donald getting kicked out of games. Ogletree hitting people after the play. Mm-hmm. The way they treated Odell Beckham a couple of years ago. There's all kinds of discipline issues, stuff going on after the whistle, too.
Well, if you were doing a pool, which would be extremely
strange,
wrong, of which defensive coordinators would most likely be caught in a scandal for their players being dirty, I think Greg Williams would have been basically at the top of the list.
Has to be.
And he was. Now, yeah. I mean, I'm saying even before Bounty Gate happened, and he was. So I don't think it was a surprise.
Yep.
And one other change on the other side of the ball in Cleveland, Pep Hamilton, who came over this past season as an associate head coach of the offense, is joining Jim Harbaugh in Michigan. So Hugh has some work to do on both sides of the ball. Moving on, another move. Bill Musgrave was the offensive coordinator of a Raiders offense that put a lot of points on the board this year, but that doesn't mean he's coming back. Rap Sheet reports that Musgrave is, quote, not expected to return to Oakland in 2017. Musgrave's offense finished sixth in the NFL in total yards and seventh in points, but they're going in-house, Greg, and in-house means the quarterback's coach, I believe.
Yeah, that's
the rumor,
expectation,
anyway.
And just, you know, reading the quick articles about this, it really sounds like they were maybe worried that the quarterback's coach was going to leave. Todd Downing is his name, for another coordinator job, so this is their way of keeping him. Because otherwise, it's a little strange. Carr's going to have his third offensive coordinator now in 4 years, but if you're just promoting from within, you're not changing the system, that makes a little more sense to me.
I feel like the one thing that we've learned from Hard Knocks, well, not the one thing, but one thing we have learned, is that the quarterback room, the quarterback coach, has so much day-to-day interaction with his quarterbacks that if this is the guy that Derek Carr feels attached at the hip to, that you don't want to lose him. You want to keep that guy,
yeah,
that Derek Carr, under, you know, the growth he had this year, that he feels the most comfortable with.
Speaking of Derek Carr, it's been
five days
since I learned that Derek Carr, that Raiders star, blocked me on Twitter. I thank everyone, the outpouring of support, tweets at Derek Carr to change his mind for what was really a completely unfair. I'm not saying I didn't ask for this.
You're right.
But I'm thanking the people that did, trying to get him to change his mind. But yes, 5 days and counting, Derek Carr blocking the
I'm place. Kind of with Greg. It feels like if you're Derek Carr and you're suddenly getting, you know, hundreds of tweets regarding an NFL, you know, media figure and why you blocked him, that it's not going to necessarily heal the relationship.
Or he opens up the books, if you know what I'm saying, and says, what did I really do this for, and was that the right decision? I think it can't help. That's the way I look at it.
This needs a 1982-style evening news graphic, America held hostage, day seven or whatever.
I want to know, before we move on, what did Bill Musgrave do to Jack Del Rio for him to torture this guy like a little cat playing with a ball of yarn. He hired him in Jacksonville as his offensive coordinator. After 2 years, fired him there. Then he's like, okay, you know, 20 years later or whatever, 15 years later, it's all good. Let's hire you again, buddy. That's not going to happen again. And then 2 years later, fire him again.
Controversial theory here, but Derek Carr has proven to have an itchy trigger finger. I mean, maybe Derek Carr blocked him out of his life.
Yeah.
Never
I mean,
know.
The guy does unfair things. We know that.
You know when you were a kid?
Could have been at the center at all.
This is not like you were a kid and you'd have friends sleep over and it was a cool thing because you could stay up late. But then like around like 10 in the morning the next day, you're like, I'm ready for this friend to leave. Like he's a good friend, but it's time for him to get out of my house. Maybe that's how the Del Rio Musgrave relationship.
Sure, like midway through this season, he was like, oh, yeah, this guy just annoys me. Yeah. That's why I fired him.
That's why.
Time.
All right, where were we? Derek Carr got Bill Musgrave fired. Next up, Jordy Nelson. We're probably not going to see Jordy this weekend in Dallas. Coach Mike McCarthy told reporters on Monday that the star wideout had a shot to suit up for the divisional round matchup on Sunday. But that would take a, quote, incredible effort, according to Rap Sheet, who cited sources to report that Nelson suffered at least two fractured ribs after taking a vicious shot from Giants cornerback Leon Hall in the first half of Green Bay's win over the Giants in the wild card playoffs. Chris Wessling, we all know Aaron Rodgers is playing incredibly right now, and as whoever's in the lineup, they're putting up points. But as the opponents get tougher and tougher, is this going to show itself as being a major problem?
The way Aaron Rodgers is playing, I think they'll be fine. I really do. I think that Geronimo Allison has played well when he's played. Randall Cobb is coming off his best game in 2 years. Devontae Adams has played well except for a few drops. But I think Aaron Rodgers can still take apart the Cowboys' defense without Jordy Nelson.
I think it's a huge problem because I think their offense has to play at such a high level to keep up with their defense, which this week and maybe next week has brutal matchups where they're not going to be able to keep up on the field. And like last year, we put everything on, oh, they're struggling because Jordy's gone. That was too much. I think this week it's almost too much the other way, that it's not going to be a big factor. He's still easily one of their two best receivers. Him and Adams are easily the best two, and there's a drop to Allison, and that hurts going against a good Cowboys secondary. PFF had the Cowboys secondary as the number one group in the league, and they're deep. I don't know if I agree with that.
It's insane.
But it's a deep secondary, so losing Nelson to me is a big-time factor. Come on.
By the way, if you want to hear – their talk about Aaron Rodgers said he might play with a Kevlar vest. If you want to hear the story of the invention of the football flak jacket, NFL.com/loveyablue. It's in there.
There you go.
Wow.
One of Wes's long forms that you could see only on NFL.com. By the way, if Randall Cobb is going to be Randall Cobb again, they're going to be fine.
Right.
Right? Because he was such a great player. And then he disappeared, and then all of a sudden he showed up again. That would definitely compensate for
him
the loss.
Him and Adams
in my
had
opinion.
Like 250 yards and four touchdowns last week.
I get it, but I just mean they have to be A++ to beat a team like the Cowboys.
They've been A++ for 8 weeks.
I don't think you just take away a guy who's your best receiver, and it's like, oh, that's nothing. They're fine.
Yeah.
Cowboys had Dez Bryant taken away, and they were a better team during that stretch?
They beat the Packers for one.
Right.
Did you guys see what Aaron Rodgers said like 7 weeks ago? He said that the Packers can run the table.
Really?
The breaking news. I think we could run the table.
I want a list of all the things that he said or other people have said that never happened. Because I could go back. I think the week before he said something vaguely similar to that. And like then
they lost.
Then they lost one more time. And then he said that.
No. It's like the most Greg angle on this story you could possibly come up with.
It's true.
Finally in the news, a little nugget here. This past weekend's four wild card games had a total margin of victory of 76 points. That 19-point differential average is the highest of any wild card weekend since 1981 and makes this opening round the most lopsided since expanding to four teams in 1990. That's per NFL research.
81. I mean, that's a full 35 years ago.
Break it down. One decade, two decade, three decade. That's between three and four decades. Okay.
We've talked about all year, the haves and the have-nots.
That's as long as Eli Manning's been playing for the Giants.
He's been around the team a very long time. Well, that's what's happening in the news. That's a good nug.
Yeah.
You like to get out on a nug. Speaking of nugs, I got a sexy nug in front of me. It's a banger from the great Mark Sessler. It's titled Super Bowl 51, : ranking the sexiest potential matchups. And I like this, Mark. I like this. There are 8 teams remaining in the playoffs. So you look at all these teams. Mark. Take me. I'm trying to walk myself through your thought process. Tell me if I go astray and just put me back on the path.
Okay.
So there's 8 teams.
Yeah.
Okay. There's any number of permutations for these teams remaining, right?
There's a finite number.
There's
a finite number.
And you said, well, let's break it down. But the one thing you couldn't do, you couldn't have the Cowboys and the Packers in the Super Bowl. Why? Same conference.
Bingo.
It's not how the Super Bowl works.
Yeah.
Well, plus, they're playing this week.
Yeah, I mean, right. It really not boiled either. Down yeah. to, as many of these assignments do, I was asked to do it by an editor, and I did it.
So let's talk about it. And I think everyone will agree with your number one choice. Well, I don't know if that's – I know Greg won't agree. But the Dallas Cowboys versus the Pittsburgh Steelers. And Mark, explain to the audience and maybe the younger kids out there why this is such a special matchup.
Well, okay. I think number one, obviously, if you care about football history, which is probably, you know, a fraction of the audience at this point.
It's like 2% of the audience, and they're all working in the media.
Sure, and that's would be the group of people that would think it's some sort of harking back to their 2 Super Bowl clashes in the 70s. For people that are still kind of old, Troy Aikman's Cowboys beat Neil O'Donnell's Steelers in 1995. But for me, the reason that I put this number one is because when we see Dallas at the height of its powers and when we see the Steelers at the height of theirs and you look back to what happened in Week 10, arguably the game of the year, and you look at Le'Veon Bell and Ezekiel Elliott, I don't know what's not to like about this matchup. It's just, to me, the most complete option for a Super Bowl out there. In my opinion.
Got to tell you, I was skeptical going into this, but your explanation swayed me.
Oh, you've done it again, Mark. You've impressed Wes with a point you've made. Always great. Always great. That's, you did it again.
It's one of Dan's favorite things.
It should be its own segment.
Sydney, can we work on that for the offseason, an entire episode where it's just Wes saying, what a great point you just made, Mark?
I've done it like 6 times ever.
I'm not sure Sydney's still here.
So that's a nice matchup.
I think so. That's why I put it number one.
But it's to you, it's a nice matchup, but one that's very close. And, Greg, you tell me you agree with this one. I feel like this one would be your number one. The Green Bay Packers against the New England Patriots. Well, oh, man.
My number one would be what's number 3 on
the list. Oh, what is that?
Dallas Cowboys, New England Patriots. And I bet, you know, I'm a company man. I'm born the same day as Roger Goodell. I bet this is what old – I'm born the same day as Chris Wessling, too, of course.
Wow, bury the
all three of us. Power trio, NFL.
You guys, like – something feels slightly suspicious about the three
Wes,
of you all being born the same day.
Your take on that.
Thanks a lot, One Way.
What does that even mean?
One Way. You only care about yourself.
Oh, I was talking about Goodell. The whole point was the league –
they would salivate.
They would love a little Cowboys Patriots. And I'm with you. The Steelers Cowboys would be maybe the most exciting Super Bowl matchup we've had in years. Seahawks Patriots was pretty good 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. But Cowboys Patriots, the Patriots' chance to win a 5th Super Bowl against this Cowboys team. I mean, it just feels like a little bit of everything.
That's
in that matchup.
A great matchup. Can I just say something though? And you're not going to like this. In fact, let's head over to the Throne of Sleaze. Because I don't think a lot of people have even thought about this yet. But I thought about this the other day. Went down into my lab. You know my lab.
Findings.
It's in a knot hole in a tree.
Boo Radley?
Yeah. And it's a large knot hole. It's one of those giant trees in the forest in a different part of the world.
You basically, like, kicked the Keebler elves out of there.
Yeah, hollowed it out.
Sure.
With my woodwork. Anyway. If the Green Bay Packers go on to the Super Bowl, I'm dead serious about this, Greg, and Aaron Rodgers continues what's turning into a legendary run, I got to tell you, and I don't know if anybody agrees with it, but I certainly would hold some stock with me. If they end up in a Packers-Patriots Super Bowl, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, best quarterback ever, is going to be a discussion. And if Aaron Rodgers beats Tom Brady in that game, you don't have to, this Peyton Manning thing where you think you vanquished Peyton and Tom's the number one quarterback ever by a large margin. Aaron Aaron's your great threat now for your precious title of best quarterback ever, especially if he gets to the Super Bowl against your boy and beats him. And that's why it's my favorite one, because it hurts the Patriots and the people that love them.
You just constructed a narrative that won't even catch on. He would need to continue that legendary run for like 5 or 6 years.
Wait, that's the thing. Like, why do we have to do the greatest of all time right in the middle of his career? He is so early. At this point in Tom Brady's career,
I didn't warn you about this.
He still had how many Super Bowl chances and how many MVP? You know, you don't know what the rest of
Aaron. He had won 3 Super Bowls by now, Tom Brady.
He won 3 Super Bowls before Aaron Rodgers played, literally. I mean, in his career.
All right, he's old, yeah. What do you want from me?
My point is, it's too early. That doesn't bother me. The chance to win a 5th Super Bowl.
You got to get a bigger picture, Greg. Bigger picture.
Well, the bigger picture. You're not as concerned about greatest quarterback of all time. Like, that's always going to be debated. How about greatest team of all time? That's what would hurt if you make it to the Super Bowl and you have a chance to win the 5th. I mean, that kind of puts it on, like, there's no argument, I don't think, in terms of who had the best sustained excellence dynasty, whatever you want to
call it. I would agree. It's the hardest time now to keep doing what they're doing. So, yeah. Bar none.
Okay. Well, that's fine.
By the way,
that would hurt.
It goes the other way,
Dan. No matter who
you're
playing.
Brady won one more in any of these scenarios, everything that you wish to happen to Brady and the Patriots is utterly mute.
You don't understand. Nobody understands what an AFC East team is going through. And a fan base. There's nothing else.
Well, I'm not on a magic carpet
there's
ride
nothing
either.
I could,
here,
you know? There's nothing. I'm just saying, in terms of the Patriots, them winning another Super Bowl, that's not going to make it any worse.
No, you're right. It won't make it any worse for you, but it will make it much better for the Patriots.
It's already the horses out of the barn that they've ruined a significant portion of my life as a football fan. So it's not like this one's going to change anything. But just remember that I said this. If Aaron Rodgers is in the Super Bowl and he beats the Pats, that's going to become a big talking point. That's all.
Well, talking points are useless. You know, it was a talking point before Super Bowl 48, was it? Is Peyton Manning the greatest of all time before the Seahawks dropped a bomb on him? I mean, that seems like ancient history. It was only a few years ago.
Yep.
Tom took the title, and now everyone recognizes him as such as the greatest. I'm just saying, watch out. You better hope that the Cowboys don't lay an egg when you're in Big D this weekend. That's all I'm going to say.
I want the Patriots in the Super Bowl.
No.
Really? I like great football, and the Patriots are the best football team this year. Also,
but you'd be down with the Steelers, so you like watching
the Steelers have won 8 in a row. They're also a great football team, and anytime they take the field, they have a chance to have the 3 best players on the field. That's another reason. But Tom Brady, I wish I could still watch Johnny Unitas. You know, I wish I could dial up some film and watch Brett Favre. I still have the opportunity to watch Tom Brady in his prime, and who knows how many he might only have 6 more years, Dan.
I think. 6 more months, more like it. I think I wouldn't have a problem with the Patriots being in the Super Bowl again as long as they lost. As long as they lost.
Well, yeah.
Them losing the Super Bowl, there's nothing more fun than that. So that's my hope. Because I obviously would want
to. That's right.
But want to see the Chiefs in the Super Bowl? I don't know about that.
It's a throne of ease type of problem, but there is no worse scenario than losing another Super Bowl. You would rather have them lose.
Get out the trumpets and flutes.
Like last year in the championship game or whatever. That is the worst.
Here come the cherubs with the grapes.
I think the commissioner could envision some worse scenarios for your team.
Well, you have number 4 on your list.
Them again?
You have number 4 on your list, Mark. The Atlanta Falcons against the Pittsburgh Steelers. And this is where we start to get in a different zone, because this is for the people that love a good football game and watching a team that isn't quite as much on the radar. But this would be, in terms from a national, like, broader perspective, not what the NFL was looking
for. Oh, no question about that. And I veered away from...
We're talking about who we want to have sex with, which games we want to have sex with. This one, maybe a 6 out of 10 in terms of attractiveness.
I think that's fair. But if you look at what the Falcons are right now, they could provide one of the great Super Bowl offenses we've ever seen.
So you find them sexy.
I do.
I find this out.
Eye of the beholder.
Yeah.
Yes, so do I.
Very hot.
These top 4 matchups you throw out there, I mean, they're all offense crazy. I mean, it's...
Well, what else is there at this point? We just got off a show.
Well, number 5, yeah.
Well, we got off a show where we just acknowledged that essentially this number 1 defense and throw me your best defense, they keep getting walloped, so get them out of the way.
Well, here are the Seattle Seahawks against the Patriots at number 5. I believe this should be higher only because, again, you have to kind of spin forward for this. So if the Seahawks are in the Super Bowl, that tells us that they've won three consecutive playoff games and they're feeling good, looking like the Seahawks we know, and then you get to build up to the 2 weeks of the big rematch of arguably the best Super Bowl ever. I would put this in the top three, maybe two.
This is purely selfish where I put them. Again, at the top of this thing, I said all these people, this is my opinion. I feel like it was 5 days ago that I was covering the Patriots-Seahawks Super Bowl, and I don't need to go back with the same exact storylines. I've got 15 articles about, will they throw from the one-yard line? I don't want a deal. I want fresh new storylines.
That was a fun press box, though.
Yes, it was. Well, we had a great time at that game.
Well, if you have...
poor Dan. Yeah, I forgot about Dan. You got moved down to the middle of the... That was not
fun. That was the best thing that could have happened because that was the lowest moment of the Around the NFL podcast. And Wes is excusable. You're not really latched onto a team and you were just getting excited about the game. Mark, jumping around to the Patriots. Wes and Greg after touchdowns by Julian Edelman.
Dan's like, I just watched one of the greatest moments in football history. Well, you know.
Let me go hug a colleague.
It was genuinely.
I don't remember any hugs.
There were hugs. It was a great game. It was a great game, but I am a much bigger Tom Brady fan than I think you would care to hear about. I like Tom Brady a lot. I didn't want his career to go out with two Giants losses and then a third loss.
God, that would have been so sad. What a setback for Tom personally if he would have lost that.
Okay.
He'd never recover from it.
Bonus game.
Green Bay Packers against Kansas City Chiefs. Okay.
Well, here's why. It would be literally 50 years after Super Bowl I in a rematch of Super Bowl I. And I think that would be an interesting matchup.
It was a classic Super Bowl I.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, the Chiefs.
No, yeah, I was being sarcastic.
And we're going to think
half
differently.
Empty and it was a blowout.
If the Chiefs knock off.
It wasn't even called the Super Bowl.
The Steelers, and then they knock off New England. Then we can believe in the fact that they can topple two good offenses. I don't think that's going to happen.
I like the high school age listener who responded to Mark and included me in the tweet and said he hopes this matchup happens so I can regale the listeners with stories of Super Bowl I. As if I was there covering the game or something.
What would be the one that would lead to the biggest collective like pants pooping of sadness from the league office? What is the matchup?
Oh, it's got to be
Houston, Atlanta.
Yes.
More realistically, Chiefs, Atlanta.
Yeah.
I mean, Houston.
That would be a rematch of a great game.
Right. I think it'd be a good game, but it wouldn't, considering you got Dallas in the mix and then Pittsburgh, New England in the mix.
Houston playing in Houston for the Super Bowl would be the only good thing about Houston in the Super Bowl.
The Cowboys, as great as this rest of the NFC field is, and I don't know, I'd have to go back, but you'd be hard-pressed to find a better divisional round in one conference than this.
I'm loving this divisional round.
It's crazy. And yet, as good as it is, Dallas is such far and away the story of the year to me and the best thing going that if they can make it, that's a thing.
There you go. You could read Mark's full article at NFL.com/Sessler.
Well, which is a phony vanity URL because it simply takes you to – if I've written four articles since then, good luck finding it.
It's the third one down.
I mean, it's asking a lot from the reader. NFL.com/sexiest? Well, they said, you know what? This one doesn't need a vanity URL. That's what I'm saying. That was their editorial decision.
NFL.com/sexgames.
That might go to a calendar or something.
I mean, you can lobby for that.
All right. There you go. Before we leave you all today, it's time to hit up the old ATN mailbag. Do we have any type of music for that, Sid?
I can mix them up.
Yeah, let's see what you got. It's time for the Around the NFL mailbag. You ready?
You could even hit me delivering it.
I could say something very quick while she's saying that. You could have Doug Marone
sing
whistle music from the other
yeah,
day.
Yeah, that's good.
Okay.
While she looks for that, we need to thank Daniel Clark, longtime listener who sent us a care package of amazing food items, which, you know, Dan, I know you took some.
Yeah, for sure.
What would you take? Some
apple chips.
Apple chips home for your wife who just had a child.
Yeah.
Great thing to give to a wife.
A few weeks ago, yeah. Kid's 2 months old now.
All right. Well, just is closer than if we talked a year from now.
All right. Time for the Around the NFL mailbag delivered by Chris Wesley. Not exactly delivered by Wes, but he'll be involved with the
metaphorically.
Process. Yeah, metaphorically. Greg, do you want to get us going?
Oh, wow. Starting with me. All right.
Do you want to work that up to that?
That's no, awesome. No. This is good. This wasn't prepared. We had a listener, that's what I'm trying to find, who asked Young, his Twitter account, Young Work Visa. If each hero were a rapper, who would they be? And so I've tried to think about it.
Now, this is kind of your purview because I'm a fan of some hip-hop. I know this side of the table, not as much. But some.
I'm a fan of hip-hop.
Like what? I didn't know this. This is news.
I'm a fan of all genres that are done well. Hip-hop's done well. Yeah.
Back off, Doug Marone.
Yeah, I like hip-hop.
I like it if it makes me.
Cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head.
That's Wes and
you know what I'm saying?
I'm sorry, I don't know how I got back in here.
Anyway.
I'm a fan of lots of genres, too. Just throwing that out there.
I am, too.
Like
the woman singer-songwriter.
I don't like this whole bitch acting like, you know, give me a break.
Wes was the easiest one to come up with if each hero were a rapper. He's Dr. Dre. I mean, he's kind of the...
Solid.
Little cantankerous... You know, kind of a he's got to come at you with some strong opinions. He's not going to take any guff. Mm-hmm. He's kind of the old man on the block.
Wow, I really came out smelling like roses on this one.
They forgot it's about me would be his song.
Mark, this is an odd one. You know,
oh God,
no. This, well, the first one, the first one that came to mind is this guy Danny Brown because he's just from he's from left field. He's from. He jumps on the track.
He sits outside the 7-Eleven down the street.
On this new Run the Jewels album, he comes on the track, and you're like, who is this guy? You can't believe it. Like, it's from another planet. He's blowing your hair off. You know what I mean?
I'll have to listen to him.
You don't know where he's going. Young Thug was another one that came to mind.
Oh, I mean, I feel similar very thing. Aligned to Young Thug.
Danny Brown or Young Thug, okay?
Yeah. I'm going to write these names down.
Dan was the hardest to come up with, but I think the easiest answer is he's Kanye.
Oh, yeah. There we go.
You know?
Well, is that good? That might
versatile,
be bad.
You know, are you an awful human
he's
being?
He's versatile, very talented, a leader. You know, Dan loves him some Dan. It all sort of works.
Yeah, I hope it ends better for me. I don't want to be in a psych ward.
He's very successful.
I'd be rich, but right, what about you?
No, I didn't think of one for me.
Yeah, think of yourself.
Well, come on. You know inside
we're
your
gonna
heart.
Come back
maybe
to that.
Maybe okay. Yeah, maybe I'd like to be Lil Wayne. You know?
Yeah, I was actually going to say Lil Wayne.
Little guy.
Come up with one for new money. I mean,
small
new money
guy.
Just needs to be new money. I mean, we just have to create someone.
You know, past his prime, has had substance abuse issues. It all works for me.
Good one, Greg.
Nicely done.
Let's move on. Kind of going through this in real time. Okay, have heard a lot about this from at Sing for the Day, Christopher Watchen. Heard a lot about Murray and Henry, Thunder and Thunder. Which two running backs would combine to make the best legal backfield? What does that mean? I don't know.
I think lethal, maybe he said.
Most lethal backfield. Let's hope that's what it is. Mm. Wes.
I think you take Le'Veon Bell and David Johnson. Why wouldn't you?
Hmm.
If you can have any two, why not just combine the best two?
Zeke Elliott and...
Sure, throw him in there too.
And Zach Zenner?
I don't think Zenner quite...
Yeah, you maybe have a guy who's a little more of a receiver type, but those two... Yeah, those two. I think Zeke and Bell. That's where I'd go. Or Zeke and Johnson.
I like Zeke
that's
and Bell.
That's some sort of combo.
Okay, this one from M_Bo at MBo80. For a house to qualify as a beach house, what is the maximum distance in minutes... that can separate the house from the beach.
You can't measure it by minutes. Here's how you measure a beach house. Can you see the ocean from the house? That's a beach house.
So do you live at a beach house?
That's a good question.
I can see the ocean if I walk out onto my patio.
Wait a minute, though. Caveat, there are plenty of roads right near my house, which are they're up on a hill. And they're at least a 12-minute drive from the beach if you're going 40 miles an hour, but you can see the ocean and the beach from there.
Mm.
Got me there.
I think you have to be able to hear the seagulls.
And I was in Miami with my new beach
Which
house.
This one did
well,
not.
Well, it was a couple minutes from the
She's
beach.
She's hearing other things.
I think you all right.
I think Wes's is a beach house because you can hear the ocean probably from your
I think so. I think as someone that has experience on the Jersey Shore, I consider one of the hallmarks of a beach house are people parking on your street and taking their stuff and walking down to the beach.
Right. And how
about
this?
Got to be close enough to the beach where people would be parking in your neighborhood and making the walk. That's
kind
of a sign.
That is great. Or if you are at your house having some people over for drinks and cornhole like you do, Wes, that you could walk to the beach in sandals without it being a task.
Yeah.
You know, this lady that lives 6-7 minutes in, like, rough and tumble Jacksonville, you got to probably, like, catch a bus to get you to the beach. That's not a beach house.
One time we had a party and we lost a person. Remember that?
Yes, I do.
Yet to be found. Let's see.
Where is Tammy?
Let's see. Oh, here's a good one.
Dan, we were trying to kill time there for you.
Here's a good one. Mark, I'll ask you this one. Callum Leslie, at Callum Leslie 92. What's been your least favorite narrative or hot take this season? Boatgate, a late runner, Callum says, but what's your least favorite?
The entire AFC.
Is that a narrative?
A narrative?
Well, it umbrellas everything that I'm fed up with. The least favorite narrative, oh, I'll tell you what it is. It's the fact that every single minute I turn on the television after the month of October, it's what to do with Tony Romo. Will Tony Romo play again? Is Tony Romo being treated fairly enough? Did Tony Romo's speech have an impact on the locker room? Is Tony Romo going to play in the playoffs? Is Tony Romo the better starter? Is Tony Romo the guy that needs to be on the field? Why is Tony Romo not playing? I mean, enough with it already, every network around.
I totally agree with you. I think that is, to me, the far and away the most tired narrative. If there was a commercial that was the equivalent of that, it would be the Jennifer Garner Capital One commercial where she brings her dad on.
Yeah.
And she's like, my dad loves my commercials, and now here's my dad. He's like, can I do the catchphrase? It's like, what's in your wallet? Oh, dad. It's like, what? What? Who are the ad wizards that came up with this one?
Well, it
wave farewell to that potential sponsor.
It
come at me, MasterCard.
What? They have power.
I think it's Capital One, so they've really done their job there in hooking you.
That concept came back to Hunter because they were trying, you know, she was trying to humanize herself and her dad, and ultimately
it backfired.
It backfired in a big
spot. Oh, here's a good question, Mark. At Jose Got the Tacos.
Hi, Jose Got the Tacos.
James Somerville. Is Sessler ever going to write a book? He seems to enjoy coming up with long, drawn-out scenarios for bits. I like how that ended.
Bits. Would need to clone myself. Don't have enough time or a solid idea at this point.
But
things that would be requisite.
Okay, if you had the time, would it be something you would like to do?
I would like to. That doesn't mean you can do it. I mean, how many people try to do something like that? I think multiple people in this room would like to.
All right. Wes, this one's for you. From Simon Campbell at DJ Death Star. Good name. Not good enough for whistles, I guess. Would you rather spend a week with J.J. Watt in his cabin or a week with OBJ and Bieber on the boat? Wes.
Oof.
Oh, my God. I have to answer?
Yes.
Yeah. You got to pick. You don't actually have to do it.
Probably not an invite that's coming your way.
Unlikely.
Nor would I accept.
All right, Wes. Just, you know, you got to pick one, bro.
I
would think, can I just say, I'm stunned you didn't answer one immediately. I felt like Watt in the cabin, at least there's some Wes aesthetic involved, and he's got the cornhole outside, and he's going to have some beers and a fire pit and some music probably, and maybe you'd even learn that he's not such a bad guy, he just tries too hard, whereas the other scene sounds like a total nightmare for Chris Wessling. Club music, loud, phony people, bottle service, all the hallmarks of the things that you loathe.
All right, you swayed me. I mean, I'm a person who loves to be by the water.
Did I make a good point?
But it's
not
a boat.
Did I make a good point too, Chris?
Dan, you really raised a number of good – a series of good –
You hear that, Derek Carr?
An ascending series of excellent points.
I like how Dan's strategy with Derek Carr was to guarantee he never unblocks him ever again.
You know what? Do I have to do it? You have 1 week, Derek Carr. If you do not unblock me in 1 week, I declare vengeance! 7 days, baby. You got the time to figure it out.
You know what the key was?
What?
you used the phrase club music, and I was like, yeah, that's anything with Bieber, Odell Beckham, and club music.
But it's on a boat.
I would take the Beckham and Bieber scenario in a second.
Yeah, you'd have, if nothing else, it would be you'd be on a boat, and it would be like you could report back your findings. It would be an interesting thing.
Well, what
watch.
If you find out you don't like J.J. Watt, and then you're alone with him in a cabin for seven?
It's rough.
I like the group thing. There's going to be other people. There's going to be fantastic talents and young people all over the place. Musicians, like all sorts. It'd be great.
Much greater chance that Justin Bieber annoys the absolute crap out of me.
Most likely. Watt, the worst case scenario with Watt, honestly, is he tries so hard to impress you by how great he is and kind of humble bragging and things that it drives you mad and you're in the middle of the woods and you turn into Jack Nicholson in The Shining.
Right, and then he blocks you on Twitter.
Judging by what I've seen on video, I could spend the entire weekend trying to remake his cornhole form because he needs it.
Yeah. All right, let's do a couple more.
Sounds like a rom-com.
Cuddled up together by the roaring fire.
All right.
Reading books to each other, Wes and J.J. Watt. Much more in common than they realized.
Contrary to what you would expect, he would actually be the one sitting on my lap.
Here's one for you, Wes. Julian Cantor at the Barry Man. Can Wes please unblock me?
Nah. I don't know. I mean, what did you do to deserve it, Julian Cantor, Barry Man, whatever? I don't know. State your case to someone else and have him pass it along to me.
All right, last one. Aaron Williams at Aaron C. Will. Why does Greg hate the Falcons? Also, why is his name spelled with a stutter?
What does that mean? An extra G?
Yeah.
I guess so.
Well, the extra G means it's not Gregory. It just ends the name. There's no Gregory involved. So there's that. Me and Greg Williams and Greg Doyle representing. Well, I don't hate the Falcons. What does that mean? I love the Falcons.
I think that's your hip-hop name, Extra G.
60%.
60% G is my rap name. Always wanted.
I don't think you hate the Falcons.
No, not at all. I like watching them.
All right. Good stuff. Good mailbag. Nice mailbag. Solid mailbag. We will be back. When will we be back? We'll be back on Thursday with another episode of the Around the NFL podcast in which we break down each of the four playoff games coming up this weekend. It is the best weekend of the year, divisional weekend, where you get, and we got a good one this year. There's only one fraud in there. So you're going to have three really good games, hopefully, and then one, you know, extra bye week on the Throne of Ease. But we're getting now to some real fun football. So we'll be breaking down all of those games. So make sure you check in. Also leave comments and star ratings on iTunes. That supports the show, and we believe that support could help the show with bigger dreams we have about what we can do with the show in 2017 and beyond. That's it. This is Dan Hanses signing off for Quiet Storm, the Man Cannon, the Old Boss, and New Money Behind the Glass. Till Thursday.